Hello, everybody. I'm Danny Boom Boom McCarthy.
Boom, 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 boom. Gonna shoot you right down at all your feet. Take you home with me. Put you in my house. Boom, 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 boom. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love to see you walk up and down the floor. When you're talking to me, that baby talk.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Story of Nowhere podcast. As always, I'm your host, Daniel McCartney. I've had a bit of a hiatus lately. I deeply apologize for that, although the reason behind it we will get into momentarily on today's show. But anyway, I'm back, and that's what matters. And today, I'm going to do just an off-the-cuff episode, as I am often wont to do. Although this one is a bit different from all the other ones I've done, because this one features a guest. Or really, rather, two guests, I suppose. My first guest is my lovely wife, Alice. Speaking to the microphone, dear.
Hi, everybody.
And our second guest is, well, would you like to go ahead and introduce her?
Well, she's not going to talk much because she's unconscious and she doesn't know any words. Our second guest is our infant daughter, who was born just under a week ago.
Yes, 6 days ago she was born. So that explains why I haven't been podcasting lately. We've been preparing, I suppose, for her arrival. Emotionally and physically and mentally and...
stocking up on groceries,
yeah,
that kind of thing.
Just generally preparing for her birth, which occurred here at home. So that's what we're going to talk about today. This episode is just about the birth of our daughter.
Home births.
Yeah.
Why you should have one.
Yes, it's a commercial for home births. So today we're talking about home birth. A theme of this show has always been, I guess, independence from central systems and these institutions, I suppose, that have inserted themselves into the mundane aspects of our lives. In my book and in the introductory episodes of the show, I talk about food independence, income independence, educational independence, thinking independence, all that kind of stuff. And I suppose another area in which we could all strive to be independent is not just in the rearing and raising of our children, but actually in the birthing of our children. In the United States, and I guess in a lot of the Western world, birth, and well, pregnancy and birth have both been kind of cast as this medical malady, something that needs to be dealt with by doctors in a hospital, something that requires monitors and gear, stirrups and equipment and cold metal objects. When you just stop and think about it, the reality is that the vast, vast majority of human beings throughout all of our history have been born without all of these supposedly helpful scientific and technological advances, which I suppose raises the question, do we really need these things? So I'm going to let Alice do hopefully most of the talking throughout this, but I just want to say that I suppose, would it be safe to say that part of our motivation for having a home birth was, I'm reluctant to say, spite or resentment,
no,
but a resistance to that trend of institutionalization and sterilization, technologization of something as organic as birth.
Well, that's part of it. But I would phrase it more like the birth of our child is something that we wanted to do. It's just something we wanted to do ourselves. It's something that we didn't want to have interference with. It's something that we wanted to be able to make our own decisions about, something we wanted to be able to guide from our own knowledge base, and most importantly, from my body's instincts.
Right.
When you have a birth in a hospital, there are a lot of factors that go into decisions about your care and the way your child is born. And most of those factors have absolutely nothing to do with you, your baby, or the way your labor is progressing. A lot of the factors are, how much time are you spending in the hospital bed? How soon would they like to get you out of that hospital bed? The insurance, the hospital's insurance has a lot to do with the way decisions are made. For instance, there are very few obstetricians that will perform a vaginal birth after C-section, meaning if previously you had children who were born via C-section, cesarean, it's pretty difficult to find somebody who will help you deliver your next baby vaginally. And that is not necessarily a safety reason. It's actually a stipulation made by insurance companies. And I should say, before we go any further, if you want more objective information about this and not just things that Danny and I are remembering off the top of our heads, read any book by Ina Mae Gaskin. She has Birth Matters, The Midwife's Manifesto is the subtitle, and Midwife's Guide to Childbirth, Ina Mae Gaskin's Childbirth.
I only read the Birth Matters one.
And so that's where we learned a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today. So if you want more detailed information and to double check that we remembered everything accurately,
right,
you can read her books. And they're wonderful and they're easy to read.
I'll put them in the show notes.
Okay. So what was I talking about? VBAC?
You were talking about how oftentimes people who had a C-section can't later have a vaginal birth. Why would one want a vaginal birth, Alice?
Oh, okay. So C-section is major surgery. And no matter how uninvasive, which by the way, a C-section is not an uninvasive surgery. They cut you open. They basically gut you. And there is always a risk to your life when you go under the knife. Anytime you go under anesthesia, there's a risk. Mm. And there are women who die because they had a C-section.
Yeah.
Now, this is not to say that there's no place for C-sections. C-sections save lives, absolutely, of babies and mothers.
Sure.
And that's an important thing to remember about all of this, too, is that modern medicine does have its place. If you have gestational diabetes, preeclampsia, there are certain complications where you want to be in a hospital for your birth. I have a friend who has a bleeding disorder. You obviously don't want to have a home birth if you have a bleeding disorder. You want bags and bags of extra blood on deck and people who know how to hook you up to them.
Yeah.
But going back to the way decisions are made about your labor in the hospital, I've heard stories of women who are going into labor and they're starting to get the urge to push and nurses tell them not to push only because the doctor isn't there yet. Well, if the baby's coming, the baby's coming, and fuck the doctor. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And we've heard stories from people who were, well, we heard a firsthand account of this actually occurring by someone it happened to, and then also a account of somebody who was next to somebody who this happened to, where back in the old days anyway, it sometimes would be the case that if the doctor wasn't present in the hospital and the baby was coming, nurses would actually cross the legs of the mother in order to stop the baby from coming out of the vagina, which, of course, the baby's still coming. And so it would wind up either suffocating the baby in in the thigh meat or like crushing its head.
Let's not get into that stuff too deeply. I'd rather not think about it. But even things like that aren't as dangerous, like an epidural, you can be encouraged to take in a hospital, you know, even if that wasn't originally in your birth plan. And you don't necessarily want an epidural because then you can't feel when to push the baby out.
Yeah.
They have to try and guide you. Another like simple reason, not really having so much to do with safety, not to have a hospital birth, at least for me, was they constantly check to see how dilated you are, which means that strangers are shoving their fingers up your vagina.
Right.
And I don't know about you guys listening. I personally am not a huge fan of that.
My listeners don't have vaginas.
Oh, that's funny. So I wanted to have a home birth because I wanted to be able to guide my birth on my own terms. And I wanted to have a natural birth, and I didn't want anybody around who was going to encourage me to take medical measures when I was, when you're in labor, you're in a slightly vulnerable state. You don't want somebody trying to influence your decision-making process.
Right, right. Especially under the banner of, well, we're experts.
Yeah.
We've done this however many dozens or hundreds of times. We know what we're talking about. We've got all this equipment, which was designed by people who know what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. It's a really high-pressure environment. And in the hospital, in so many different contexts, not just of birth, but birth as well, there's this kind of almost peer pressure, I guess, to just go along with whatever they say, because of course they're all, again, the experts. And if you're just there asking questions, or you kind of don't know if you want to do the thing they want you to do, then you always kind of have to face this idea that, well, maybe they're going to look at me differently. Maybe they're going to treat me differently.
And they do sometimes.
Right. Is this going to affect my treatment if I'm the person who's asking, hey, what's in that drug? Or, hey, do I really need this? Et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I've always been interested in the idea of having a home birth, and we actually were originally going to have a hospital birth and just get a midwife at the hospital and make a strict birth plan and try and stick to it. And then we got a word of mouth recommendation for our midwife, and that changed our minds. We thought if we heard of somebody that somebody else really, really liked, then we would go see her, at least talk to her. And we talked to her one time and we were like, okay, this is the person that we want. We're going to do this at home. And after that, we read Ina Mae Gaskin's books, and that really solidified that decision, because I learned more in those books than I had even already known about why I don't really want a hospital birth.
Well, can we just take a minute to mention, I don't think we said it yet, but it is a theme of those books, at least the one that I read, but also just midwifery in general, that the human body, well, all mammal bodies that are female are designed to give birth in a certain way. Like, that's the vagina is built for that.
The uterus and the vagina.
The uterus, it's all equipped, whether you want to say it's designed or it's evolutionarily blah, blah, blah.
It works.
Whatever you think the reasoning behind it is.
The body is a system that is designed to give birth.
Right.
That's what it's meant to do. It has millions of years of stored information about how it ought to go.
Right. And so the point of this kind of midwife natural birth, do you want to call it philosophy practice, that we've embraced, is really just, except for in special circumstances, your best bet with regards to pregnancy and birth is to just get out of the way and let it happen. Whereas modern medicine wants to poke and prod and get involved and say, oh, well, we're going to schedule your when you're going to give birth. We're going to induce. Mm-hmm. We're going to cut. We're going to blah, blah, blah. What we're doing, or what we did, is more just, we're going to get out of the way and watch and listen and be ready for when showtime occurs.
And there are ways that you can gently and naturally nudge your birth process. You can guide it carefully and uninvasively. And we, in my birth, did have a couple of things like that that were helpful. Before giving birth, I drank some nettle tea, which is supposed to strengthen uterine contractions, and ate a bunch of dates. It's supposed to do that too. You know, there's a lot of folk knowledge that people have sworn by for hundreds of years that science hasn't had a chance to study in depth. So we have a lot of anecdotal evidence about some things, like, for instance, castor oil triggering labor is one that you'll hear a lot.
Oh, man. So all of my coworkers were telling me, get Alice to drink castor oil, because, you know, we didn't mention, but you were overdue.
Yeah, I was, when I finally went into labor, I was 41 weeks and 3 days, which is not abnormal for a first-time mom, but it is to the point where you're like, okay, I'm ready. Like, let's do it.
It was past the due date, and so people were constantly telling me, have you drink castor oil, get the baby out, and finally, you got out some castor oil, and you didn't take it. You were like, I'm taking it tomorrow morning, and that was the night that you weren't going into labor.
Funnily enough. But let's just talk a little bit more about the philosophy of midwifery and some of the things that we learned about it, and like those gentle nudges I was talking about. Like, so one of the main hormones in birth is oxytocin. And a lot of you people out there have probably heard of this. This is, they call it the cuddle hormone.
The love drug.
And it can be triggered through laughing, physical affection, even words of affirmation. This is the hormone that triggers contractions. And it's also it's an endorphin. So it helps you process the intensity of labor. Some people call it intensity. Other people obviously call it pain. I would say for me, it hurt.
It sounded like it hurt.
Yeah.
You told me it hurt.
But there are women who don't experience pain when they're giving birth. There are some women who experience pleasure when they're giving birth. So some ways that you can make the birth process go easier without using an epidural, some ways that you can ease the discomfort, you can make the mom laugh while she's in labor. That helps. It helps loosen you up. It's really important to be relaxed when you're giving birth. It's really important to control your breathing, which has kind of, breathing practices have become a theme in my life. And a lot of people out there, I think, are going to relate to this, that obviously breath is the root of life. And if you can develop discipline around breathing, you can develop, I don't want to say control necessarily, but you can absolutely have a positive impact on your life simply by being mindful of the way you breathe. And birth is no exception.
Dude, don't even get me started on breathing. One of these days, I'm going to do a 20-hour episode on breath.
There are a lot of different breathing exercises that you can learn before you go into labor. I'm sure you guys have heard of Lamaze, but there's also I believe it's called the Bradley method. I never learned like any method in particular. I just watched some YouTube videos, learned some different breaths, and then had to be reminded about them later.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really important to breathe right. It will ease the discomfort. It will make sure that your oxygen gets all the way to the baby and not just going straight to your head. What are some other things? Oh, affection. I've read a couple of birth stories where the woman was struggling through transition. Transition is when the baby is actually moving out of your body. And she's really having a hard time. She was scared. She didn't want to do it because it was so intense. And the midwife recommended that she make out with her husband during a contraction. And it worked.
Yeah.
Because it triggers oxytocin. And there's all kinds of different stuff that you can do. A lot of midwives recommend telling the mother she looks beautiful while she's giving birth. Things like that. Telling her she's doing a great job. Words of affirmation. And it's weird how things that simple can have an effect. I don't know about, we'll get into my birth story later, but yeah, I've read a lot of birth stories where something as simple as just a kind word or a kiss, or one of the things that Ina May talks about is breathing like a horse. Exhaling like can actually.
You frightened our second guest.
I startled the baby. Sorry, honey. She didn't wake up though. She's a good sleeper. There was one other thing that I wanted to talk about as far as natural birth goes.
Well, I just want to. I'll let you try and conjure that up.
Yeah.
But
what was that?
I want to just contrast the sort of emotional and affectionate contributing factors to labor that you're describing, contrast those with the sterile, professional, technological environment of the hospital.
And it's tense there, and and it can be really scary, and it does make a huge difference if you're frightened when you're giving birth as opposed to when if you're relaxed, if you're stressed out. One of the birth stories I read, a woman was pushing her baby out, and her baby had a facial presentation, which means that the baby was coming out face first, which is really rare and
spooky.
And it's not, you know, it looks freaky. And the doctor who was delivering her baby saw it and got this horrified look on his face because he wasn't familiar with, he had never seen one before in person.
Yeah.
And the woman was so frightened by his frightened face that her body sucked the baby back up into her so hard that it broke her rib.
That's nuts.
That's the kind of thing your body is capable of. And, another great contrast about home births to hospital births is the position your body is in. Laying on your back for most women is the most difficult way to give birth. If you look at a cross section of the female anatomy, the cervix, when you're laying on your back, points upwards. So you actually have to basically push your baby up a ramp, up and over a ramp to give birth to it when you're lying on your back.
You have to fight against gravity.
You have to fight against gravity. There are so many better ways. You can lie on your side with one leg lifted. You can turn over onto all fours. You can even give birth to your baby standing up.
You can squat.
You can squat. There's a lot of different ways. There should be like, you know, the Kama Sutra?
Yeah.
There should be that, but for giving birth.
There probably is. Some Sanskrit lunatic out there is in a cave with a scroll. Yeah. All the different methods of giving birth and breathing through it, too, I'm sure.
Yeah,
it's like there are so many ways to give birth. And, of course, sophisticated, cutting-edge, modern Western medicine has chosen perhaps the worst possible way, short of standing on your head, to give birth. And it just makes you wonder what the hell is going on in this country.
It's about control.
Well, yeah, and it's one of those things, too, where, you know, I often make the joke about the EPA response to 9/11, how I know this is a little bit off topic, but I like it's relevant, I think, where in 9/11, there was, what is it, 200 acres worth of pulverized concrete and asbestos just floating in like volcanic clouds through New York, and the EPA is like, well, we're running studies to figure out whether or not the air is safe to breathe. And it's like, bitch, I don't need a damn study.
Right.
You know, like there comes a point where data is just distracting. You could use common sense. I don't need to really hear much detail about the positioning of birth with, you know, in the stirrups in the hospital and all that stuff to be able to see, like, that's dumb.
Yeah, well, there's a simple way of putting it. The baby is born out of a very similar part of your body as where you have a BM. How many of you think it would be easy to push out a difficult BM when you're lying on your back?
Right. Well, you're lying on your back in a strange public restroom that you're not comfortable in.
And not only do... They not only are there like the nurses and the doctor, whoever that is, usually not even your own doctor, but they have medical students will come in to complete, not even fully fledged doctors. They will come in and check the dilation of your cervix, aka finger you.
Right.
And many other things as well. Stick you to give you an IV, all kinds of stuff. And, you know,
If you personally, wouldn't like it just, while you're pooping, you wouldn't like it in labor.
Yeah, that's right. Called sphincter law. That's another one of Ina May's philosophies. It's the cervix. It's not technically a sphincter, but it behaves very similarly. It opens and closes. And so much like your anal sphincter, it's not going to work if you're under stress. It's not going to want to open. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I certainly don't think I could take a shit on stage.
Yeah, you could.
I think you could. But
actually, you're one of the few people who probably could. I think you could give birth and shit on stage.
I probably could
at the same time.
Give birth. Well, we'll get into that.
You could be one of them, like, five instruments at the same time type of ladies, but with bodily functions.
So do we want to say any more about midwifery versus modern medicine?
Oh, geez. I don't know. Probably.
We've given you guys sort of a haphazard overview. I think we've given you the broad strokes.
I just like to talk shit about medicine. And that's not to say that it doesn't have its place. Like you said, there are applications for allopathic medicine, of course. And you'd be an idiot to deny that. And it would also be a straw man argument to say that Alice and I here are denying the utility of modern medicine in certain cases.
I've taken antibiotics.
But as we've said, not on the show, but in private before, medicine or human health is a very broad category of thing in which allopathy, modern medicine, whatever you want to call it, is an aspect. But the problem with our society, or whatever it is, the problem with institutionalized medicine, is it has made this aspect of human health the totality of human health. You know, we don't focus very much on diet and nutrition. We don't focus on herbal remedies or even just breath work, whatever. Everything is seen through the lens of allopathy. And that's an issue, not because allopathy is intrinsically bad, but because it's just one aspect of medicine. It's not the whole thing. So that's my issue with it. It's the application, the totalitarian, if you will, application of allopathy. So there, I mean, I guess that's probably a pretty good summary of the differences. Let's talk about how labor progresses.
Let's talk about a normal birth.
We want to tell our birth story. But before we do, I guess we should lay the groundwork so people who aren't familiar with the steps of labor, they kind of get a general grammar of what we're going to be describing. So what is the standard labor? How does it go?
Okay. So there's a few different steps. They break labor up when they're describing it into a few different steps. Early labor, active labor, which includes transition, and then the afterbirth. Early labor, on average, lasts about 12 to 24 hours for a first birth, and is typically shorter for your consecutive births. And by shorter, they mean 8 to 10 hours. And throughout early labor, you'll experience, I'm just reading off of the clevelandclinic.org, in case anybody's wondering. Throughout this time, you'll experience three stages of labor. The first stage of labor is usually the longest, and it ranges from when you first go into labor until your cervix is open. The beginning of this stage is called early labor. Early labor is described as dilating from 0 to 6 centimeters. And dilating is the word for when your cervix opens, the sphincter of your uterus. As you progress and your contractions become shorter, you'll move into the second part of the first stage of labor called active labor. Active labor is dilating from 6 to 8 centimeters and then transitioning into the second stage as you dilate 8 to 10 centimeters. Your contractions will become even stronger during active labor and your cervix will open up quickly. The second stage of active labor is when you push. This is the phase of your labor when you will actually give birth to your baby. So basically, labor involves contractions where your cervix opens slowly from closed all the way up to 10 centimeters. And then once it's open, you push your baby out.
Okay.
Those contractions in early labor are usually about 30 seconds long, and they can be as many as 20 minutes apart. And then later, when you move into active labor, your contractions are going to last about 40 to 60 seconds and be closer to 5 minutes apart. And then transitional labor, your contractions, when you're actually opening all the way to 10 centimeters and pushing your baby out, those contractions last 60 to 90 seconds and come 2 to 3 minutes apart. Everybody knows what a contraction is.
Do they?
But that's what I was just going to say. Maybe we should clarify. Your body doesn't open, your cervix doesn't open continuously. It opens a little bit and then it rests because it's really hard work. So the contraction is the muscle flexing of your cervix opening. And it has to open gradually because it's a huge change in the shape of your body that you're undergoing. If it happens too fast and the baby comes out too fast, that's when you rip or you tear, meaning that your perineum, the flesh and skin of your perineum will actually tear.
You'll be left with one master hole.
It does happen to some people, and that's called an episiotomy, when you rip from your vagina to your butthole.
It's pretty common, isn't it?
Well, actually, in the hospital, it's not entirely uncommon for them to take a scalpel and do it on purpose.
Mm-hmm. Right. I know about that.
Which I'm sure you guys could guess from everything else we've told you about birth is actually, in most cases, not at all necessary. It's just doctors being control freaks.
Well, is it just to expedite the process?
So there is a strange misconception in the medical obstetrics industry that most babies or a lot of babies are too big to actually fit out of a woman's vagina and pelvis. There's this strange idea that a lot of women don't have the right anatomy to push their baby out.
Which is dumb.
It's not true at all. You can open up as much as you need to. The pelvis is very flexible, not when you're lying on your back.
Uh-huh.
When you're on all fours, the pelvis is very flexible and it can open up. There are some rare, very, very rare cases in which a person cannot open up enough to deliver their baby. But it's very, very rare. And it doesn't matter how big your baby is either. You can have a 10-pound baby and you could be 100 pounds and you could push that baby out.
Yeah, because that's what your body
yes.
does. Like, that's the whole yeah. thing. Yeah. You didn't tear.
I actually did not tear, which, considering how fast she came out, is amazing. But I guess with having been in the warm bath and with the warm washcloth that you pressed to my perineum, that helped, I'm sure.
And you were also letting gravity do the work, so you weren't putting extra stress on that area of your body.
Right.
I don't know if that means anything, but...
No, it does. Actually, the perineum stretches long ways, and it's more taut across. So this is another thing with the difference between a home birth and a hospital birth. When you put a woman on her back and spread her legs like that, that's actually the worst position for stretching the perineum. And because that's not the direction that it's supposed to stretch in. It actually is kind of supposed to stretch out the other way. And when you are on all fours and you can kind of like push your hips back and you have that sort of pelvic mobility, then you also are at a better angle for your perineum stretching out correctly.
Right. Makes sense.
So is there anything else we want to say about the normal progression of labor?
Did you define what transition is?
Transition, yeah, that's the stage when you're dilating to 10 centimeters and you're starting to push the baby out.
So that's when the baby has entered the birth canal.
Yes, is entering, enters the birth canal and then moves through it.
So transition begins when the baby enters the birth canal and ends when the baby exits the vagina.
I think transition begins when the cervix reaches 10 centimeters. Obviously, the baby can't enter the birth canal until then.
Right. So that's kind of the same thing.
Sort of.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So now we tell our birth story, huh?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Oh, where do we start? I was 41 weeks over in a few days. I was starting to feel like...
You were never...
Like I was never going to go into labor. I really was doubting that it would ever happen at this point, which is crazy, of course. But, you know, your mind does weird things to you sometimes.
Yeah.
So I was just trying to stay busy and keep my mind off of it. And the day before I went into labor, I just spent hanging out with my family. I had a cousin and an aunt in town, and they came over here and had lunch, and then we went over to my grand's house and got takeout and just talked and ate and hung out all day. And then I came home And eventually Danny got home from work and we watched a movie together.
Yeah. So I got home from work and it was just kind of like any other night, I guess. We watched a movie and then you went to bed and everything was normal. You got the castor oil out.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to use it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then went to bed and I stayed up.
Yeah.
Like I do.
And I didn't feel anything out of the ordinary all day. I actually felt pretty good. I had a lot of energy. I don't remember anything in particular that could have indicated what was about to happen. So I went to bed, and soon after going to bed, I felt what felt like a strong menstrual cramp. And I said to myself, well, I've been feeling weird things for weeks, because I should mention, in the late stages of pregnancies, you can experience what are called Braxton Hicks contractions. In fact, some people experience those throughout their entire pregnancy. Mm. And there's also what's called prodromal labor, which I believe has to do with the thinning of the cervix before it actually starts opening. But these are both things that are kind of, they feel kind of like contractions. They feel kind of like cramps, but they're not real labor. So I'd had a little bit of that for the past few weeks. And so I had just learned to ignore them because it didn't mean anything. So I had that cramp lying in bed and I rolled over and tried to go to sleep. And then probably 10 minutes later, I had something different. It was an intensity level that was not like anything else I'd ever felt. It didn't quite hurt at this point, I wouldn't say. It was just really intense, and it seemed to move through me in a rhythm. It builds, and then it fades away. I thought, is that labor? And it also kind of made me feel like I had to go pee. So I got up and I went to the bathroom, and Danny met me in the bathroom with some drinking water, and I told him, I think I just had a contraction.
Yeah, so I was downstairs. Alice was upstairs. I was in the basement in my office working on a project, working on a new addition to the Story of Nowhere library, storyofnowhere.com/library, printing another book. I was working on that, and I heard the usual creaks and stomps that indicate Alice has indeed gotten out of bed. Which always in me prompts, I don't know, a sense of urgency. Like, I better get up there and
see what's going on.
I better meet her before she comes down and says, what the hell are you still doing awake? I have to go and get you so you don't come and get me.
Right.
So I race upstairs with a glass of water, meet you in the bathroom, and then you say, I think I just had a contraction.
But I was really skeptical that I was actually going into labor, because like I said, I'd been experiencing this and that and strange sensations. And I also have like weird gut issues. Like I have IBS. So I have all kinds of like funky, painful sensations in my abdomen on a regular basis.
Yeah. But as you were telling me that you thought you had a contraction, like mid-sentence, you're like, I'm having another one.
Yeah, that's right. It was only at this point, that was like maybe 8 to 10 minutes after the previous one. And it was even more intense. And, but I still didn't really believe it. I thought it still might be like false labor or prodromal labor. So I went back to bed and laid down, and I laid down in bed and immediately had another contraction.
Yeah.
And it was almost right away. 'Cause had you even made it back downstairs yet before I got back out of bed?
Yeah, I think I did.
Yeah. So it was a few minutes later,
but not, yeah, I want to say it was like maybe 10 minutes, because I went back downstairs, you went back to bed, and then, yeah, then we met up again. I heard you get back up, and you said, I had another one in bed, and I'm having another one now.
Yeah.
So you had two in that 10-minute space. So that means they were about 4 or 5 minutes apart at this point.
Yeah, and about maybe 45 seconds long.
Right.
So they were definitely closer together than normally would be in early labor. But for some reason, I was feeling this self-doubt. I had a lot of internal conflict at the time. I had two conflicting thoughts and feelings. One, I had an intuition that this is real labor. This is happening. Like, get fucking ready.
Yeah.
And then I had self-doubt. I've never done this before. Obviously, I'm a first-time mom. I don't know what it's supposed to feel like. I was feeling self-conscious about calling the midwife and telling her, you know, get over here.
Right.
So we were in the bathroom for a long time debating if we should call her or not. And it was to the point now where my contractions were 45 seconds long, sometimes even a minute. They were super intense. I was shivering uncontrollably.
And pretty early on, you got the bloody show.
Oh, the bloody show. Yes. Yeah. I went pee and I wiped myself and there was some blood on the toilet paper. And that's a sign of early labor.
Right.
In fact, sometimes you get bloody show like a whole day before you start to notice contractions.
Right. So that was another thing where we're like, okay, it's coming.
But like, labor, is this it?
Labor is on its way, but it could be another day. You had the bloody show. And then at some point after that, we called the midwife. But honestly, the chronology is a little bit of a blur.
Yeah.
I think that...
It's a little hazy.
I mean, just the other day, we were recounting the story, maybe to your parents, and there was a whole aspect of... That part where I went back downstairs and you went back to bed, I had completely forgotten that.
Yeah.
So the whole night, in retrospect, is kind of hazy. Yeah. Although I think we're doing a pretty good job of piecing it back together. Certainly, we remember the major moments, but...
And that's part of why we're doing this, too, is to have a record of it while it's still somewhat clear in our minds.
Yes, yes. There are a number of reasons we're telling our story, but that's definitely one of them, is just for our own clarity of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So you had the bloody show, maybe you had a few more contractions, but at some point, I don't know, it was probably definitely within the hour, maybe an hour... max, after your first contraction that we called the midwife.
Yeah.
And at this point, again, it had only been about an hour, so the midwife basically said, all right, what you guys need to do now is try and slow these contractions down.
Not quite. She said, okay, I gotcha. Call me if anything changes. And so we started getting the bedroom ready. You put a mattress protector on the bed, and I think I stayed in the bathroom, and I just sat on the toilet for my contractions.
Yeah.
Because that's where I felt the most comfortable.
Yeah. I prepared the bedroom.
And and you did this and that, and then I must have said something to you, like, call her back. It was getting more intense. At least it felt like it. It certainly wasn't slowing down, and I knew that these contractions were coming, like... At this point, it almost felt to me like they were coming one on top of the other.
Well, by the time I called her, I think the first time even, I had timed the contractions out to be about 2 minutes.
Jeez.
Apart.
Yeah.
So, and then they would last about 45 seconds to a minute.
Yeah.
So they were almost right on top of each other. And,
yeah.
I wonder if the audience can hear her.
Her little noises.
Her little moans and groans. That's funny, you know, that I don't know if people listening know this, but that intro to my show, the hello everybody, I'm Danny Boom Boom McCarthy, that is actually me. that is me back in like 1997 or 8. My dad had me recording like a mock DJ set on CD-ROM. He like set up this thing, he had a bunch of music, and he had me DJ it, and I was 3. I was either 2 or 3. I don't know. I don't remember, and neither does he. But I figure this baby, you know, we're going to beat my record of getting her on the media scene. She's 6 days, and already she's on a podcast. God love her. But I'm not going to say her name. I'm not doxing my baby. I'm not giving her birthday. I'm not giving her name. And I'm not putting her picture in the album art, or whatever you call it, the cover... thing.
Yeah, let's keep her in
if she wants to
presence to a minimum for sure.
But anyway.
So we call the midwife a second time, and at this point I'm feeling really frustrated and confused because it seems like my labor is really intense way sooner than it should be. And it made me kind of doubt myself and doubt my instincts, especially because as she seemed convinced that either it wasn't Well, I was worried she didn't think I was really in labor, but we talked to her later and she was like, no, I just thought it was still very early, which of course it should have been. But
This is called foreshadowing.
I had an instinct at that point. We got off the phone with her for the second or third time because we just kept calling her like nothing's changing, contractions aren't slowing down.
And by the way, at this point, it's like 3:30 in the morning.
Yeah, something 3:45. Like that. And I've only been in labor for about an hour. And so I was pretty frustrated and confused. And when we hung up with her the second or third time, I remember telling Danny, we might have this baby without a midwife.
Yeah. Which...
because our midwife's an hour away, and I could feel the way things were progressing, and I just had a feeling.
And we always knew that was a possibility, but it was never very likely because even though the midwife is an hour away, generally speaking, labor is an event that lasts multiple hours, especially first-time labor. Yes. Especially first time, like you already said.
It could have been a whole day. The reason she didn't want to come out to our house right away is because she didn't want to come out here and then have me be in labor and like hosting her for the next day, the next 12 to 24 hours.
And because again, that is actually something that it might seem counterintuitive for people who either don't have kids or aren't women or mothers or or whatever, but it can actually be very stressful for the mother to have to entertain somebody, even in the context of that person being there to care for her. Like, if the midwife were at our house, even though she's there to take care of Alice, I know that Alice would have felt a sort of obligation to make sure she had something to drink, make sure she was comfortable, make sure that everything was in order.
Yeah.
And that's very common. And we've had this conversation with other people and with the midwife herself. That's a very common feeling that women have, like this kind of hostess urge, which, again, back to the hospital thing, we don't want the mother to be stressed out any more than she needs to be while she's in labor. And adding another person there too soon would contribute to that stress. So that's why you really want the midwife to show up, not at the last minute, but you don't want her to get there too soon.
So yeah, at this point, our midwife is not leaving the house. She's not on her way. And I had a feeling. I turned to Danny and I said, we might be having this baby without a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which means I would have to do the delivery myself.
Yeah. And sometime around then also, I felt like maybe I had the urge to push. And this was only an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours into labor, which is insane and unheard of. So of course I doubted myself, but that was what I felt. And so we called the midwife again.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't tell her that because I knew she wouldn't believe me.
Yeah. So you told me right before I called, you said, I feel the urge to push, but don't tell her.
Yeah. Because I knew she wouldn't believe me. And I was right. We talked to her about this later and she was like, I would not have believed you. That's insane that you felt the urge to push that early.
But she wanted us to slow the contractions down because operating under the premise that this was early labor, she was figuring that if Alice's contractions were coming this fast and this intense right now, then if labor was going to last for, you know, 10, 12, 14 hours, Alice was going to be exhausted, like physically exhausted by hour two or three. And so we really needed to slow these contractions down and mellow them so Alice could actually physically manage the long haul that we expected labor to be. So the midwife told me to take Alice down to the bathtub, get her in a warm bath, and just kind of soothe and relax her body so that it would be better equipped for the marathon of labor.
So we did that, and the bath felt amazing. The midwife said a warm bath, but I told Danny, I was like, fuck that. I want a hot bath.
Well, but I didn't really listen to you, though. I still kept it warm. I'm following what the midwife says at this point, not your insane, impassioned whims.
So you didn't see me crank it up?
No, I did, but I made sure to crank it down. You weren't looking at it.
Yeah, so, and this was supposed to slow the labor down. And it didn't. I was in the tub for 30 minutes, and I had 5-6 contractions.
But it's important to note.
Maybe it did a little bit. Maybe it did slow things down.
Well, I was by this time, I had already been timing the contractions and the space between them. But it's important to note that once you got into the bathtub, it didn't slow them, but it seemed to remove that urge to push.
Oh, at yeah. At least... I only felt that once, and then it went away.
Right.
It,
well, and then we got in the tub, and you said, like, oh, this is nice, this, maybe it's helping. You weren't sure. You're like, I can't tell if it's making it better or what.
Yeah, yeah.
But talk about urge to push stopped after that first time you mentioned it. And so I kind of thought, well, all right, so maybe that was a fluke.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think maybe you thought the same thing, if you were really thinking at all.
Well, you remember, I was thinking about a lot of different things. I was having some weird anxieties. Right. I was having that frustration and the internal conflict that I already talked about. So I was thinking about a lot of different stuff. But when I got in the tub, I wasn't so sure anymore that things were moving that fast until the last contraction in the tub was really intense, and it made me sweat. And I do remember I said, I have to get out of this fucking tub, and you need to call the midwife again.
Yeah.
And so he called her again, and she finally was like, okay, let me talk to Alice. I want to hear how she's doing. And she was asking me, like, where I was feeling the contractions, and I couldn't answer her. I didn't know what to say. I thought she was like, because if they're in this certain part of your uterus, then it's still early labor. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe they are just in the lower part of my uterus or whatever. I didn't even know how to answer. But I was really frustrated that she was asking me that, because I really just wanted her to get her ass over here. And I think she heard that in my voice, because she was like, I'm putting my pants on. I'm getting my shit in the car. And the other thing that she told me is she listened to me have a contraction, and she told me that I needed to slow my breathing down because the baby was probably not getting quite enough oxygen with how fast I was panting.
Yeah. You were like,
yeah, because it was helping me manage the pain, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, and I didn't know this. I had forgotten it from if I had ever learned it before, that it wasn't good for the baby. So she told me to slow my breathing down. She's very firm about that, and I appreciated that. So I started focusing on that. And then after we got off the phone with her and we knew that she was on her way, I was like, okay, I need to be up in the bed.
Right. So
And she told us to go to the bed too. She said, go try lying down on your side. See if that will slow things down. We called her we called her over and over again.
Oh, you threw up.
Oh, I threw up when I was in the tub.
You threw up in the tub.
Which is a common sign that the baby is coming soon.
Right.
And did I tell you that when I threw up?
I think you remember? So.
Did I give you some warning?
You're like, this is... Well, because you had felt nauseous for a while.
Yeah, I knew I was going to throw up eventually.
Because remember, I was... before we even came downstairs, when you were in the bed, I had a bucket by you because you kept saying you were nauseous. And then I got another bucket. I had a downstairs bucket and an upstairs bucket.
Yeah, you really were running around getting everything together.
And you threw up in the downstairs bucket. And unfortunately, I forgot about the downstairs bucket, and the puke sat in there for like 2 days. Oh, I got it cleaned up.
Did it really?
It kind of stank in that room after a couple days. But yeah, so you did throw up while you were in the tub. Then we got you out. Then we took you back upstairs. And at this point, the midwife was getting ready to leave. She was like, all right, I'm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And so we got you on the bed and on your side.
To try and slow things down. And
down.
It sucked. When I was on my side, the contractions hurt the worst. That's when I would say they were most definitively an experience of pain. Because in all the other positions, there was sort of a way that I could ride the contraction. Like, so yeah, it hurt, but it wasn't like, it didn't suck, if that makes sense. It was manageable. But lying on my side, it was not manageable. It made it so much worse. And after the third contraction, lying on my side in bed, my body started pushing. And it wasn't me. It wasn't like, oh, I kind of feel the urge to push. My body heaved downwards. All of the prana in my body shoved towards my pelvis.
Well, are we skipping a part of the story here?
I don't know. Are we?
We got upstairs, and
it's your part of the story. I might not have been aware of it.
At some point, we called the midwife back, and I don't remember why? Oh.
It was because I felt the urge to push and I yelled for
that
you.
That was why.
I said, I'm pushing! Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. So is that when we called her?
Because you called her.
She was like, this was a, like, however long it took us to get up the stairs from the tub into the bed. So, I mean, 2 minutes, because you were moving.
Five, kind of
slow.
Yeah.
I don't even think it was five. I had
a contraction in the kitchen on the way to the bedroom.
Less than a handful of minutes that we called her, and she's like, I'm still trying to get my shit. Don't be calling me, dude. Didn't say that. But
no, she did. She was like, don't call me. I'm still putting my pants on. I can't get over there if I'm naked.
Something like that. And I was like, well, look, I'm not trying to rush you. I need you to tell me what to do. Because this is happening.
Yeah, you were like, okay, so Alice says she's having the urge to push. And our midwife said, okay, well, if the baby's really coming that fast, you're going to have to deliver it.
Well, she said, don't push.
She also said that.
And you said, I can't not push. And so she said, I know, but don't help it. Or something to
try
that effect.
Try and breathe through it. So, she said, try and pant through.
Right. So your body's going to push. So, you know, poop is really the best analogy, probably, for people who aren't birthing mothers.
Yeah.
Birthing people. poop is our only window into the world of motherhood. you know, your body pushes, and that's one thing, and then there's you pushing, and that's another thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And so you can have your body be pushing, and then you can push on top of that. And really expedite the process.
And it's really hard to resist when your body
right.
is pushing. It's really, really hard to resist. But you can, and this is what I discovered, there's almost a way to, like, ride the push rather than throw yourself behind it. And that did, I was able to slow things down a little bit. By this point, I was on my knees and I was gripping the headboard with my hands. And I was sweating buckets.
Dude, I didn't. So I was paying attention to the nether regions at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just remember looking up and seeing your face beet red and just pouring sweat.
Yeah. Oh. What kind of facial expression I was making? Do you remember?
Yeah, no. I just remember the sweat. Holy shit, that happened fast.
Yeah.
Because the last time I had looked at you was just a couple minutes ago and you weren't sweating. I mean, maybe you were, but not like that.
So at this point, the midwife is on speakerphone. She's on her way.
And it seems like Alice is... At this point, the idea that this is false labor, that's totally out the window.
Yeah, and the idea that it's early labor.
The idea that it's early labor is still looking like it's out the window. Although, at this point, I'm still thinking, like, okay... Maybe it's not going to be 10 hours. Maybe it's going to be 4.
Okay, see, I knew. Five.
Well, but sure you did, but I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just trying to... And maybe part of me is kind of hoping that it was going to last.
Yeah, yeah.
And that, I don't know, you guys were just being hyperbolic. Like, oh, you're going to have to do it. I'm like, no, I'm not. That's crazy. Like, because it doesn't happen this quick. That's just not a thing.
It's totally unheard of.
It's not a thing for a first-time mother to have her baby that... quickly. But at the same time, I am still like mentally prepared. As I've said, I knew this was a possibility. People have been asking me, because, you know, we're weirdos for having the home birth midwife thing. And I work with normal blue collar American people. And I talk with these people and they ask me, like, what the fuck are you thinking? And aren't you scared? Like, what if you have to do the delivery and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I genuinely never felt nervous or anxious or afraid about that possibility that I would have to do the delivery. And even in the moment, I'm not trying to sound like some kind of fucking, like, I don't even know. Like,
cocky.
Right. I'm not trying to be that way. But I didn't feel fear because I felt as if there wasn't any room for that. Or rather, I didn't feel there was any room. There was just, there was no, I was numb in a way. And maybe that's kind of fucked up too.
No.
But the whole process, even before the birthday, there was a sort of numbness that I felt surrounding your labor where I wasn't looking at it looking forward to it with anxiety or nervousness or even really anticipation. I was just ready. I felt like, I'm going to try to use a sports metaphor, but it's going to fall flat because I don't know shit about sports. But who's the guy that the quarterback hikes the ball to?
What do you call him? Halfback?
I don't know.
Oh,
God, we're nerds. Our baby's going to be a nerd. Well, I'm that guy. You know, he stands with his knees bent and his hands out like this.
Yeah.
That was me. And I felt like that guy for a month. And so in this moment, while...
No, the quarterback gets the ball hiked to him.
Oh. Well, who's the other guy?
So you felt like the quarterback, right, when he gets the ball hiked to him.
So the quarterback throws the ball.
Yes.
He gets it hiked to him and then throws it.
Yes.
So who hikes it to him?
Well, why would you be that guy? That would be me.
But the quarterback is the guy who says, like, woo-a-doo!
Yes.
Is
hike.
That guy.
And then he says hike.
All right. So he's still in charge. So I was the quarterback, but I didn't get to make the call
of
when you hike the ball. Yeah. You hike the ball, and I get it. I don't throw it, hopefully. So, yeah. Anyway.
So that's what you...
So I was ready. I was numb and ready. And even in the moment, while, like, parts of my brain... I was almost like a passive observer, hearing certain aspects of my mind say, like, nah, the midwife will be here. And then there was another guy in my head who was like, what if she's not? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
None of it really mattered because I was just here.
You were doing.
Yeah. Like, it was just noise. I heard thoughts, but I didn't feel them.
And you were mostly just, at the time, like, giving me water, like, making sure I had water and just, like, watching my vagina,
holding a rag to your perineum.
Oh, so that was, yeah, at some point, the midwife recommended that you get a warm washcloth and hold it to my perineum, because part of the reason she told me not to push with the contractions was because she didn't want me to tear. She was worried the baby was coming too fast and that I would tear. And the warm washcloth to the perineum is supposed to help it stretch out more easily.
Yeah.
And so you were doing things like that. And meanwhile, I'm feeling the baby move into my birth canal.
Jesus.
I knew she was coming. I could feel her coming. And I knew she was going to be there soon. And that's soon after that, I felt her crowning. And that's when you said,
what the fuck is that?
Which I was pretty angry that you said
sorry.
That. But luckily, I kind of knew.
Back to the doctor thing. That story you told about when the doctor grimaced. Yeah, well, look, you know me better than anybody else does.
Yeah.
Earlier in the night, when you were in the tub, I was joking with you.
Yeah.
And kind of making fun. And you were laughing, and it was working, and everything was fine.
Mm-hmm.
When I said, what the fuck is that? I really did. It was like half joking.
I know.
It's like, oh, God. But then... I realized that there's, you know, timing is everything, as they say, because I saw what I was seeing, but you didn't. And so for all you knew, I was saying, what the fuck is that? And I was seeing some like heinous, unhealthy green shit pouring out of your vagina.
I was wondering if that was a possibility when you said that.
When in fact, what I saw was this clear orb. And, you know... I more or less know the progression of labor at this point. I've read I read one book on birth, but we've been talking about this kind of shit and whatever. I saw this clear orb. Oh, we also forgot to mention, we have to get better at telling stories if we're going to raise this baby right.
Right.
We also forgot to mention that over the course of conferring with the midwife earlier, She tried to figure out whether or not Alice's water had broke. And at one point, Alice said that you thought it might have.
Well, because I couldn't tell if it was my water breaking or if I was peeing.
But this was...
That was way earlier.
This is
way
before
earlier.
You were even in labor. We didn't know whether or not your water had broken. So I suddenly see this clear orb emerge from your womanhood. Just,
you can say vagina.
Huh?
You can say vagina.
Not on this show, you can't. I'll bleep it out.
So at this point, you're not even seeing the it's like the shape of an eye still, right?
Yeah, so if you think of
and the
like
orb
a,
would be the white of an eye.
The Hindu, third eye, you know, where it's like vertical?
I don't know, actually.
Oh, it's some of the artwork they do. They'll have the third eye, but it's vertical. So the tear duct things are on up and down. It was like that.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes you wonder, and that's where this comes from. There was this clear eyeball-like thing emerging from your vertical vagina.
Yeah.
And
are you still pressing the washcloth to my
Wow, it really did look like an eyeball now that I think about it. Holy shit.
I thought so.
It really did. It looked like the white of an eye.
Yeah.
So I saw that, and my first thought was, oh my God, why is my baby's head see-through? That can't be good.
Yeah.
I was half expecting to see, like, with another push, I was half expecting to see her brain through this translucent thing, and she was just going to be, like, a clear entity of nerves and veins that I could just see everything. Like one of those models in a medical book.
Yeah.
That was just going to be who she was. She's got a very rare illness. And so I expressed that in not so many words to the midwife, who is still on speakerphone, and she said, that's the water sac, which precedes the baby. So
she said the baby's head is going to be right behind that. So I knew that that meant I was crowning, and I could feel that. And I even reached my hand down and touched it because I kind of wanted to see like how far out she was and what the water sac felt like. But so I knew that that meant that's the baby's head. She's going to be here any minute.
I did not like you reaching down and touching. I was like, get out of here.
Well, he was worried my hands weren't clean or some weird
thing. No, I was worried that you were in such a state of like writhing and passion that you would just take your finger and jam it through her head.
No, like, right I knew through her exactly soft spot. What was going on.
I thought
on.
You were
going to
just...
I just wanted to see how far we were, and I was quite pleased, I thought.
Well, so maybe I felt a little insecure, like you thought I couldn't do my job.
Well, I was just pleased to see that we didn't have much further to go, and right. I focused on trying to slow it down a little bit. Once I started crowning, I didn't want to tear. I was really scared of tearing. There were about two contractions where I was able to keep the baby's head from moving much further. But then after that, it was like, all right, I can't hold it anymore. Like, here we go. And
yeah, you got that deep Viking.
Yeah. And I
snarl
and I pushed her out in what do you want to say?
Well, you're skating right over the fun part.
What's the fun part?
Well, the fun part is her birth, but you gotta massage it a little bit. You can't just say, and then she was born.
Well, how would you like to tell us?
Well, I don't know. Just with a little more finesse.
A little more panache.
Yeah, come on.
Well, but I'm the one who's experiencing it, and this is how I experienced it. At this point, I was pretty calm. I was worried about tearing, but I was glad I was almost done, and I was just focusing on breathing slow. And like I said, I really could only slow it down for two contractions before I had to just go with what my body wanted.
I feel like it was pretty late in this experience, like after she was already crowning, after the water bag had presented itself, when, you know, I was describing what I was seeing. The water bag coming through. I think at one point I said to the midwife, I was like, it's getting bigger and bigger every time. There's just more and more of it. And at some point, that's when she like kind of said, not even to us, or maybe it was to us, but just like kind of as an aside, I heard it. She says like, ah, shit, I'm stuck in a train.
Oh, is that when?
Oh, no. All right.
Is that when she was stuck?
I think so.
When I was crowning?
I think so.
Oh, my God.
Like, all right. Well.
That's hilarious.
Drop your cocks and grab your socks, boys.
Yeah.
It's all on you. So that's, you push. And I was expecting a sack of water, like a water balloon, to precede the baby.
You didn't realize she was in
I thought
the water
that you would give birth to a condom full of water, which would pop. And then, like, an hour later, maybe the baby would come.
Oh, my God. Wow, so, you really had no idea what was going on.
So when I saw the water sack finally, like, coming out and looking like it was going to keep coming, I put my arm underneath it. I'm exaggerating a little bit. I didn't think it was going to be an hour in between. Mm-hmm. But I thought there was going to be a period of time mm-hmm. in between your water officially breaking and the baby coming, because I knew that, you know, generally speaking, in the movies or whatever, your water breaks and then you go into labor and there's a period of time in between. So I thought these were separate events.
Oh,
you see where I'm coming from? Yeah. You see why I got confused? Mm-hmm. I thought your water would break. And then that meant that there was still a whole nother process of labor going on that we weren't done with. Mm-hmm. So I see the water bag coming and I'm describing this to the midwife. And I don't remember what the hell she said or what you were doing. I just remember paying attention to your crotch and my mm-hmm. hand.
Mm-hmm.
And the bag comes out and I notice, oh shit, there's a little nose.
Yeah.
There's the lips. There's the eyes in that bag.
Yeah.
And then, without any warning, other than a hoo, the whole rest of the baby's body just slides right out of you.
In the bag.
Still contained perfectly in the bag. And I, just like the stork would have delivered her. And I caught her. You had, at this point, positioned yourself. You had been on all fours on the bed.
Yeah, so as I was pushing, it felt amazing to push. It felt so good to push. It didn't even really hurt. Like,
oh, please.
No, I mean, really, it was too intense to be considerate pain. It was more like riding a roller coaster. Every single contraction was like that second when you go over the top of the hill and right before you drop, and it's like this intense thrill, only like if you could experience that physically instead of psychologically. It felt like quicksilver, like white hot energy. And, but it did hurt like a bitch too. And so I was kind of running away from the pain, almost like an animal. So I had been like inching along the headboard on all fours with my hands gripping the headboard. It felt really good to have something to hold on to.
Sure.
And our headboard, by the way, guys, it's not a headboard.
It's not a board. It's
like a brass bar. So it was perfect.
Yeah.
And so I was holding onto that and just inching along it until eventually I got to the edge of the bed and I swung one leg off the bed and put it on the ground and locked my knee and put one hand over on the opposite wall to brace myself. And that was the last couple pushes.
Right.
As she was crowning and coming out. And luckily Danny was there to kind of push hips over the bed.
Right when you threw yourself over the bed like that, I knew that you weren't present in the practical manner that I was present. You were having a furious experience.
Oh.
A quicksilver, white-hot experience.
Yeah.
Where I was, you know, I wasn't feeling anything. I didn't feel anything. I was there. And so I was able to observe what was going on. And the reason I knew that you weren't present is because the way you positioned yourself when you did that, your vagina was as much over the soft bed as it was over the distant hardwood floor.
Yeah.
You know, 2.5 feet below.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, like, okay, well, that's not a decision that Alice would have made.
Yes. Okay.
This is a reaction to a feeling that her body's having.
Mm-hmm.
And it was right at this point where, like, the crowning was happening in earnest. You had been crowning, but the baby was really coming at this point. And so moved. I think I said something to you.
You said, where are you going, bud?
Nice. I took you by the back and just guided your butt and your whole...
I couldn't even feel that.
...lower portion over the bed. So you were still in the same position you were in. You still had your foot on the ground and arms up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I just moved your hindquarters.
Just shifted me a bit.
Over the mattress. Then placed my arm underneath you and then right then...
She shot out of me. She shot out of me
like a greased up cannonball.
Yeah.
She just slid right out, contained in the bag, hit my arm. The bag popped. There's mucus and blood and water all over the place. And this strange, like, water balloon film material all over my forearm, all over the baby's face and body. And so immediately my instinct was I just started peeling it off of her face.
And that's exactly what you should have done.
Pulling it from her nose and mouth.
The midwife told you to roll her over onto her side. And at this point, I was trying to turn around and look at her. And I was terrified because she hadn't made a sound yet. But as soon as you rolled her over onto her side, she coughed up some amniotic fluid and started screaming.
Yep.
And started pinking up right away. And as soon as she started screaming, I just felt this intense sense of relief. Like, we did it.
A splat of blood.
Yeah.
Fell out of you and smacked the hardwood floor.
And I was so mad. I was like, God, we worked so hard refinishing those floors.
My floor.
Because I knew that was going to happen. The moment I decided to have a home birth, I was like, oh, something's going to happen.
The floors are doomed.
Floors. But it wasn't too bad. And so we somehow...
Well, so I got you back on the bed.
The cord was really short. That was annoying. I was annoyed about that the whole afterbirth.
Well, I didn't want to, like... yank on it.
No, that you shouldn't have.
I reckoned as much.
Yeah.
I got you on the bed.
Yeah.
Probably wiped her off with the cloth. Maybe. I don't even remember if I did that.
Put her on my chest.
But we just made sure. The
midwife gave you some instructions.
Yeah, but I don't even remember.
You got a towel and a blanket. You ran all the way downstairs for a towel. And the baby and
right.
I lay on the bed. She was on my chest and we were cold.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
we were
dude.
Cold.
You were yellow.
Yeah.
You had lost so much blood and fluid, you looked jaundiced almost.
Yeah.
And the baby, you know,
she was
like
up.
A pinkish gray.
She was getting, you could see that she was turning pinker and pinker, and she was moving around. She was actually looking for my breast to latch.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the cord was too short. This is all what was happening while you were downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
The cord was too short. And I was cooing at her and telling her how beautiful she was, of course. But I also noticed that she was crawling sort of like, you know, like the first little like baby army crawling, sort of nuzzling her way around my chest, probably looking for a nipple to latch. And the cord was too short. She couldn't reach.
Yeah.
That was annoying. It's a good thing to have a short cord because it's less likely to wrap around your baby somewhere. But it's annoying during the afterbirth because you can't get her all the way up your chest.
Mm-hmm.
So when you came back up, you got me a towel and a blanket as per the midwife's instructions. And then I started whining about the cord, and I was whining about the cramps too, because I hadn't delivered the placenta. So I was still having mild contractions, but I was exhausted and I didn't want to push and I didn't want to deliver the placenta. I just wanted to lie there.
Yeah.
So I was whining a lot, and I remember saying, can I get an ibuprofen?
Yeah. And we got you an ibuprofen.
And then...
that was the extent of your drug.
That was the only drug I had, was an ibuprofen during the afterbirth.
Yeah, and you lay there with the baby. The midwife, it probably took her, even after the baby was born, it probably took another 30, 35 minutes for the midwife to get there. And of course, by the way, we have families and friends and stuff, all of whom we have been promising forever at this point. The minute Alice goes into labor, you'll get a text. We'll let you know. And because Alice had been overdue by this point, we were getting texts from people every day. It seemed like, any baby yet? You know, just the constant, hey, what's going on shit? Which, you know, it was kind of funny, but also kind of annoying. Like, we'll tell ya.
Yeah, like, you're gonna know. Don't worry.
But at this point, like, I had texted everybody showtime when we knew that it was true labor, which was around the time the midwife decided to get in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So that was maybe...
45 minutes.
No, that was, I'm gonna check.
Okay.
I'm gonna look right now, live, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I just need to look for the gigantic group text. Okay. Oh, my God. So I texted everybody showtime at 5:31, indicating that labor had begun. The baby was born at 5:51 a.m. So people got the text that Alice was in labor. Most of them didn't even see the text until the baby was already born. So that's my bad, I guess. Jeez, yeah, so I texted everybody that when the midwife decided to get in the car and make her way over, and then the baby was born about 20 minutes later, and it was another, in that case, it was probably another like 40 minutes until the midwife actually got to our house.
So
you had been laying there.
We actually don't know if I was only in labor for 4 hours or if I was in early labor all day and just never noticed.
Because you're type baby.
But like I said, I didn't feel anything. I didn't feel any cramps. I didn't feel any contractions. I looking back, I cannot recall. And Danny, you can back me up. I didn't say anything about, like, when we were watching the movie, any weird sensations.
No.
So I don't know. I personally, I think that my labor just progressed extremely quickly.
Yeah, it's bizarre, but I suppose it's possible. Either that, or like you said, you were just in labor all day and didn't know it. Maybe you've got a really high pain tolerance and are just used to gut troubles and didn't notice. That's possible too, but
that seems,
it's a mystery.
It seems like I would have noticed something because I didn't have any discomfort that day.
Right. Maybe that was the difference. Usually you do, and that was the one time you didn't. That should have been your sign that something was up.
That's funny.
I just want to mention, I pushed this baby out in, couldn't have been more than 10 contractions. It was 20 minutes. It was 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I was in transition for like 20 minutes tops. Unless I was in transition the whole time.
Yeah.
We don't really know.
We don't know. But what we do know is that the midwife got here and we...
What about cutting the cord?
Oh, right. Okay.
Tell them about that. Because I wanted the baby to be able to latch and she couldn't because the cord was too short. So I was whining about that. And so the midwife was like, well...
She's still on speakerphone at this point.
Yeah. She was like, well, Dan, you can cut it if you want. And I was like, yes, please.
Right. So I didn't mention any of this at the time because fuck it. But I had kind of wanted to leave the cord attached for at least an hour. This is something that you and I had talked about, too. You know, like, you leave the cord attached and blah, blah, blah.
But I just wanted
in the moment when Alice was like, look, dude, cut this cord, I wasn't about to say, like, well, studies have shown
you
that...
You could have.
Well, I didn't feel like I should have. Because it seemed like it was more important for you guys to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And to try and get
her...
To get her on your tit,
yeah,
as soon as possible.
Absolutely.
Whatever BS we heard about the cord, that was secondary.
Sorry, baby.
So, I got dental floss.
Yeah.
Here's
the midwife talked you through it.
I'm gonna tell everyone how this is done in case you ever find yourself in this situation. If you need to cut a fresh umbilical cord, you get 4 4-inch strands of waxed dental floss. And then you spin them up like a rope. You do that 2 times. You tie the first one around the umbilical cord about 3 or 4 inches away from the baby, where it connects to the baby. You tie it up in a knot, and you tie it pretty tight. You want to tie it tight. Not too tight, but tight.
It's a tourniquet.
You're making a tourniquet. And then about an inch below that, you tie the other floss rope in a tourniquet, pretty tight. And then you cut with a sterilized pair of scissors right in the middle.
So you just, like, dump a bunch of rubbing alcohol over them, over the sink?
Yeah.
You also, I remember, you brought them over, and I was like, oh my god, those are the shittiest pair of scissors we have in the house.
I'm not going to use the good scissors.
You should have used the kitchen scissor.
So that's how you do it. You cut in the middle, and hopefully if you tie it off right, a minimal amount of blood will spray out of the cord. We didn't have any spray.
Oh, you did a good job.
We didn't have any spray. We did have some drip. Because remember, maybe I was being a little paranoid, but there was a little blood dripping out of the cord, her end of the cord. And so I did get another 4
you
rope.
You tourniqueted it.
Oh, yeah, and I did it again just to tie it off. And it worked. And then we got the baby up on your chest. And you guys just lay in a pool of your own blood for about a half hour.
Yeah.
And then the midwife got there.
And I was in a lot of pain. The afterbirth hurt in a way, it hurt worse than pushing because I was just laying there and I couldn't do anything about it.
At one point, you groaned.
Mm-hmm. That was me pushing. That was me trying to push the placenta.
I checked under. We had a blank towel covering your lower parts, your legs and shit. And I looked under it and you groaned and you squirted out just a stream of blood. You went, ugh! And blood just sprayed out of you. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, but I was too tired to push the placenta out, right. So I couldn't. So I just lay there in pain, and it didn't hurt worse than transition, of course not. But it was less bearable psychologically because I was cold and tired and just fucking over it.
Yeah,
and I was like mad at my placenta for not just giving birth to itself. Right. Like, because so many people had told me, like, oh, you won't even notice. It practically just falls out. A lot of people had said, you're not going to have any idea what's going on when you're in labor. That's not true. It's, your mind maybe is very aware of what's going
maybe
on.
Maybe if you're on drugs.
Yeah. Your mind is very aware of what's going on. And, you still have an internal monologue. You ignore it after a while, if you're wise. But,
That's kind of like my experience. Like, I still had an internal monologue, but I didn't feel the internal monologue. It was just
like... any mind to it, you might say.
It's like when you leave the radio on. Like, you hear it, exactly. But you're not listening to it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, when I was pushing, obviously, there wasn't anything going on in my head, really, aside from breathe slow or the baby will be blue.
Right.
That was the only thing. Breathe slow if you don't want a blue baby. That was the only thing. And slow down. Try to slow down. I was thinking about what I was doing. Any thought I had was focus on what I was doing. So I was laying there in pain and whining too. I was whining about it.
Yeah, it's justified. I understand.
And eventually they made it.
They made it and
got the placenta. And I was cooing at the baby the whole time.
They got the placenta out of you. They cleaned up the mess that you had made, which was great. Oh my God.
That they cleaned
up.
I'm
so happy they did. Yeah. That was nice.
They helped me give birth to the placenta. That was the assistant. She sat me up. Danny took the baby off my chest. And can I just say, guys, I know this goes without saying, but the sensation of holding your newborn baby that you have just given birth to on your chest, there's nothing like it in the entire world. It's worth any amount of discomfort, any psychological discomfort, all the throwing up at the beginning of the pregnancy. I can't even begin to express, like, I believe in God now.
Gay. is it worth the mangle job she's doing to your nip right now?
She's being nice
this
today.
This is a tits out episode of the Story Miller podcast, everybody.
I'm nursing the baby right now. No, she's not. Earlier today, she was kind of like gnawing on me, but this is a good latch. It's comfortable.
It's worth it.
And so the midwife got there. They helped me birth the placenta, which it was such a relief afterwards. They took the baby off my chest. They helped me sit up and then told me to give a big push and just pulled ever so gently on the cord. And the placenta came flying out. And I was surprised it was so big. The placenta is as big as the baby.
It's huge. I was blown away by that.
They put it in a bowl.
In one of our, that bowl has been through a lot.
Yeah.
We've done a lot with that pink bowl. and we still have it. And I, at this point, I don't think we can ever get rid of it. But yeah, they had the placenta out of you. They cleaned up the mess, which was so
tremendous.
Nice. After the whole thing. And then, of course, they weighed the baby. They saw how long she was.
So how big was she?
She was 7 pounds, 10 ounces, and 21 inches long. 10 fingers, 10 toes, that old thing. She got 2 eyes, 2 nostrils, 1 mouth, 2 ears, all of that crap.
Oh, they checked her palate.
They checked her palate.
They checked her eyes.
They checked her eyes. They made sure that she was, you know, kosher baby. And sure enough, she was. The midwife had to fill out some, you know, like paperwork and whatnot, like birth certificate kind of stuff. So she did that. And the first person over after the midwife not very long after the placenta was delivered was Alice's mother.
Was that after I got out of the shower? They got me into the shower, which was nice, except I almost passed out in there.
Yeah, but the assistant, she was there with you.
Like, yeah,
you weren't in any danger.
She told me how to breathe.
Yeah.
And I was on my hands and knees in the shower so I wouldn't fall over or something.
Like a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the first person over was your mom. And I was so relieved that another person was over and that other people were taking care of the mess. Because I just remember coming into the bedroom where Alice was with the baby. The midwife was doing what she was doing. The assistant was doing what she was doing. And Alice's mom was just sitting there kind of gauging the situation and talking with Alice. And I was like, all right, y'all good in here? I'm going to have a beer and a cigarette.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
And that's what I did. And Jesus, it was glorious. Just went outside.
Yeah. So you had already gotten a chance to hold the baby at this point.
Yeah, I had already held her. It was like 6 something in the morning. And I just sat on our front porch with a beer and a cigarette in the morning sun, watching the school buses pick the kids up. Hell yeah. This is awesome.
So you felt good. How did you feel when you held her at first?
Jesus, I don't know.
You don't even remember?
It's not that I don't remember. It's that I don't know. It's like a paradigm shift.
That's what I was trying to describe.
I don't have...
Yeah.
I felt great. Like, what the fuck does that mean? I don't know.
Exactly.
I feel like now I have a baby. And I feel like I've always had this baby. I feel like this is the not only the new normal, but the old normal. Like,
oh, really?
I don't know. It's very... I've done too many mushrooms in my life, because it all just feels like
it is pretty trippy.
Yeah, it's a very psychedelic experience.
And she was conceived on mushrooms, funnily enough.
She was.
I was on mushrooms when this baby was conceived.
Yeah. Well, speaking of her conception, everybody go to the Midwest Peace Liberty Fest this summer. I don't know if we're going to make it. I hope so. But that's where she was conceived. So how's that for a commercial?
Oh, sorry if that's TMI for those of you who were there.
That'll be fine. That was the night we sang karaoke. Oh, Lord. I'll cut that out.
Maybe. Well, there you have it. That's our birth story.
Yeah, well... Jesus, we could probably go on and on.
The most empowering, magical experience of my life.
The moral of the story is, there are a lot of morals to this story.
There are indeed.
But just the idea that babies need to be delivered in the hospital. We live in a society where if you don't have your baby in a hospital, people will kind of look at you side-eye. Hey, wait your turn.
I think she just wants to be picked up.
People think that babies have to be delivered in a hospital with doctors in a medical environment because they fundamentally view pregnancy and birth as medical situations. And I'm here to tell you, that's just not the case. You could do it at home. You could do it yourself.
I never for a second doubted that Danny could deliver this baby. When I realized that the midwife wasn't going to make it and it was going to be just the two of us... We always knew that it was a possibility,
right.
What with our midwife being over an hour away. It was obviously not very likely, considering most first-time labors don't progress like that. I wasn't scared. There was at no point were we in danger. I would say the one thing was, thank goodness we were on the phone with somebody who could coach us through, somebody who... reminded me to slow my breathing down for
Absolutely.
The baby's sake. That was really important.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm grateful to the midwife for talking me through it. But, you know, at no point was a doctor needed.
No. Nobody ever checked to see how far dilated I was. And they didn't need to because I knew when to start pushing. I could just feel it. I knew exactly where she was in my body. I could feel her moving down, and I could feel when she entered my birth canal. So I didn't need somebody checking to see how dilated I was to tell me when to start pushing.
Right. Yeah. I'm unimpressed by doctors.
Well, but see, the thing is, if I had had a pre-existing condition of some kind, that whole home birth thing, it mm-hmm. wouldn't have been safe.
Right.
And that's important to know. There are a lot of people who aren't lucky enough to have the kind of pregnancy that I had. And there's no reason why you should feel bad about not having a home birth or a natural birth. There's no reason why you should feel, if you can give birth to a baby, no matter how that baby gets out of you, and that even if the baby's not totally healthy when she's born, like, you have accomplished something and you should feel proud and you should focus on what you have, which is a brand new beautiful baby.
Hear, hear.
I have heard women express, like, oh, I wish I had done it differently. And all I can say to them is, but look at your child. Your child is here with you now, and they're healthy and happy. And that's what really matters. Yes, of course, if you haven't had your baby yet and you're trying to decide, I would urge you to have a home birth if that is medically an option for you, which for most people it is. But if you've already had your baby, congratulations. No matter how you did it.
And also, if you're thinking, oh, darn, I should have done it differently, you know, assuming you're healthy and of the proper ages and in the circumstances that you'd like to be, you know, you can always have another one.
Yeah.
You know, you could do it again and do it the way you wanted to. And yeah, it was a wonderful experience. I wouldn't change anything about it. I'm glad that it wound up. I'm happy that I wound up being the one to deliver my daughter.
It happened exactly the way I secretly was hoping all along that the midwife wouldn't make it.
It wasn't much of a secret, at least to me. I mean, you told me. You didn't tell anyone else, but you told me from, like, the get-go.
Day one. I'm a private person. I didn't want to do something like that with other people around. I wanted it to be me and the only other person I trust.
Yeah. And here, listen to her. She's making her contribution here.
She doesn't have a dirty diaper, and she doesn't want to eat anymore, so I don't know what
she wants to be on the show. She was polite enough to wait till the very end to present herself. I'm impressed by how strong she is. You keep saying that she's got strong chi.
Yeah.
And I think you should be the one to talk about that, because you're the one who says strong chi.
Oh, yeah, she has a lot of energy. Ever since she was conceived, I felt that way.
Yeah, she was very active inside of you.
Yeah, she was. But even before she started moving around, I just had a sense that she was a strong individual.
She's got a harsh prana.
Yeah. And now that she's, I don't know what you mean by harsh, but now that she's out, she has proven it to be the case. She is already picking her head up a little bit. Which normally babies don't start to do until they're about a month old.
Yeah, she bobs her head, and it seems like every day she can actually hold it up
a little bit longer than
the previous day. And she's rolling. Babies aren't supposed to be able to roll from their back onto their side for...
until they're 3 or 4 months.
Well, she was doing that the day she was born.
Yeah.
Rolling, rolling,
and then
rolling.
Just today, she rolled from her side onto her stomach, which happens even later, usually like 5 months. So I don't know what the hell's going on with her.
Right, she's a week.
Yeah.
And she's already doing stuff that usually it takes some months for babies to be able to do. So yeah, she's a high energy, very interesting little baby. There's so much more we could talk about. We could talk about the whole nursing thing and how that started off and went, but
we don't need to get into that. That's belaboring the point.
Of course, of course, of course. I just mean that there are so many things to say about having a newborn.
Yeah.
That we're not going to get into.
Whole another story. How long have we even been doing this?
I don't know.
We took a long time. That's the other reason I wanted to do this podcast, because whenever we tell this story, I feel like I have to abbreviate it.
Yeah.
And I wanted an opportunity to really get into the details.
Yeah, and at times for the listener, it may seem tedious because we're going back and forth and jumping around and saying, wait,
yeah,
hold on.
Sorry
this
about that.
Well, you know, it's fine. That's the way we experienced it in a way. Like, it was a very scatterbrained, intense event. It was so psychedelic. It was almost non-linear. But that's our memory of it. And there you go. I hope it was an interesting story. I hope people will get something out of it. Maybe it'll convince you to at least consider having a home birth, or maybe it'll get you to talk somebody else into having, I don't know, whatever. I just hope it's of use to people, and it certainly is in keeping with the purpose of this show, which is independence from big institutions and central organizations, including the medical system. You can have babies without doctors. You can have babies without multi-billion-dollar hospital complexes and fancy machinery and shit. You know, we've been doing this as human beings for a very long time. There's a tradition of midwifery that's probably actually the oldest profession.
There's a deep well of wisdom
yeah.
to draw from.
Yeah.
That doesn't involve forceps.
Exactly. Well said. And on that note, should we end it?
Yeah.
Well, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks for listening to our story, everyone.
Yeah. Bye.
That talk and whisper in my ear, tell me she love me. I love that talk, that baby talk. She knocks me dead right off my feet. How, yeah, yeah, now baby.